You know, I, as Tom stole Scott's job, I'm also going to steal Scott's job and introduce our final speaker, which really, I don't know, everyone who knows me knows what an honor this is to introduce your final speaker to the night, and I don't know what else I can say because I've basically spent the last decade of my career saying all the nice things that I could say, but I will always, for the rest of my life, be indebted to this man for introducing me to these ideas that changed my life. They're the most beautiful and noble ideas in the history of political philosophy, and he introduced them to so many of us. He really is the reason why we have all of this energy here today. Ladies and gentlemen, please clap your hands for Dr. Ron Paul.
You know, one of the things I always finish my speeches on during the campaign would be that, you know, serious stuff we're talking about. The consequences of not having your liberty is very serious. And I said, we'll talk about that, but the most important thing is that we leave with a bit of optimism because it's not that complicated. You know, freedom is not a complicated issue, and it's a wonderful issue. But the one thing is at an event like this, and I can't give you this advice because you're already doing it, because I tell the crowds, if they're enthusiastic and like this, just have fun talking about it and spreading the message. And this crowd certainly seems to have a lot of fun. And somebody said to me, oh, yeah, they're going to be in a good mood. They might have had a little drink. And I understand that nobody drinks here. So, no, it is wonderful to be here. You know, I was thinking back. What is equivalent today to nearly $2,000 to pay my lifetime membership in the Libertarian Party, because I merely gave him a gold coin. It wasn't quite $2,000, but now to go out and get an ounce of gold, you're going to pay close to $2,000 for that. But that was to make a point, because the monetary issue is an issue that I dwelled on for a long time and continue to do it, because you can bring this together. Liberty is one thing. You can talk about liberty and work for it. But most everything that's been said today has to be paid for. And they're not going to work for it and pay for it. You can't tax the people enough, and so they have to use plunder, and that is illegal taxation. But mostly, most of the things are paid for through inflation, printing money with the remaining trust in our dollar, which is dwindling every single day. And that's not going to be the worst thing to happen if we are prepared and get enough people that protect themselves and understand it, what the answer to it is. And now it's it looks like a couple countries, I think they used to be communists or something, you know, China and Russia. Can you imagine them trying to work on a gold standard? And what are we doing? Printing money faster than ever, trillions and trillions of dollars. And the main thing is people actually think it's going to work, and it does temporarily. You know, it was mentioned, I think Dave might have mentioned it, that a lot of people don't really understand exactly what inflation is. And I said, that was certainly true about all the Federal Reserve Board members that I ever talked to. You know, when you're in a congressional office, parents will bring young children in for civics lessons. You know, teenagers or younger, this is your congressman, and this is the way you write laws. It's all fiction, you know, so to speak, because it doesn't happen that way. But during one of the campaigns, there was a couple coming in. There was a couple with their son, and their son was about, I think he said he was 14. And I said, oh, you brought your children into the meet their congressman. And they say, no, he brought us in. And he was actually watching television and listening to one of my speeches, and we talked, and all of a sudden I paused and I said, "This is amazing. You know more about the Federal Reserve than the Federal Reserve Board themselves." That's what convinced me that the one thing you don't want is to teach monetary policy to a 45 or 50-year-old PhD in economics from a Keynesian economic system. Forget it. Or anybody that maybe understands exactly what it is and they know how they can grab hold of that stuff first, get hold of the money. And that, of course, there are the special interests, the military-industrial complex, and the school system, all the way. And they have the tremendous advantage. And, of course, one of the worst things that will come of the inflation that we have is the fact that it divides us. You know, we want to bring people together. And freedom does bring people together. That's the magnificent thing about freedom. Because people come together, and people who understand freedom, as long as people aren't using violence, you can be very tolerant of what they do. You know, we certainly accept in general that we don't tell other people what their religious beliefs ought to be. And we're pretty open. And we still believe you're not supposed to steal. At least they say that, unless you're the government. And you're not allowed to counterfeit the money unless you're the government. And then you get to do that. But that is too important. But, you know, it has already been mentioned tonight about telling the truth. And I want to dwell on that a little bit because there are a lot of ideas. Ideas have consequences. We deal with ideas more than anybody else. But the problem, as I see it, is not that the ideas aren't available. It's a lying game. Who tells the biggest lies? Who gets away with the lying? And and that's what all politics is about. The misinformation and trying to demagogue the issue and bring people together for political power. The political power, though, is always so dangerous and does so much harm. And, you know, I think that the libertarian movement should be the movement, has to be the movement, because there's nothing left that will sort this out. And because the philosophy is not complicated. You know, you can't use force against people. That's really complicated. You can't steal. You can't lie, cheat, or steal. But we live in a confused time. Because not too long ago, we had an FBI agent, CIA chairman, and he was also the Secretary of State. And he says, he was joking, he was giving this major speech, and he says, you know, that's what they teach us. They teach us how to lie, cheat, and steal. And we have to kill people. And he giggled about it. And he was heading the CIA, and he was Secretary of State. And, of course, it wasn't like a slip of the tongue, you know. He was making a joke and thought it was real funny, but it was a true statement. The people who know what's going on, that's exactly the case. But because, you know, many libertarians have been taught, and I've heard it so many times, and they'll teach their children, you know, really think carefully. Don't call the police. You know, that doesn't help you out that much. So. So somebody says, does that mean I should call the FBI? You're really going to get a lot of help from those organizations. But one of the sad things happening today, because I enjoyed working with progressives, honest progressives, you know, the ones that understand it, and they're libertarian-ish on civil liberties, and there was a time that they were pretty good anti-war, and I had some good allies on there, but that's gone. And you say, oh, that's sad. Well, it is sad because you want to build and bring coalitions together, but I was able to work with them. Matter of fact, I've deep down inside, I believe it's probably every bit as easy if you can find an honest person, calls himself a progressive, believes in civil liberties, is anti-war. He's a much easier convert than a warmonger conservative wanting war all the time. But truth is what we should seek. And this is the whole thing. It's trying to decide, you know, what truth is. And I got to thinking about that in for recent times and listening to these campaigns. Does the Biden campaign tell more lies than the Republican campaigns? Well, that's up for grabs, but they're all big eyes. And but the one thing that the big lie I don't like is they pretend they really hate each other's guts. But you take the top 10 people in each political party, and they're buddies. They're drinking buddies, and they get along quite well. Do you think the Republican Party is more opposed to the Federal Reserve than the Democrats? I mean. Do you think the Republicans are less likely to start a war than the Democrats? Now the Democrats are joining in on these wars. And what about just the welfare state, deficit finance? They've all been taught in the same school. You know, and I do place a lot of emphasis on the basic education because I went through the government education, 12 years, grade school, high school, and then a college. It was a private college, but it was very, very typical. And the history, the economics, and everything was the same stuff. And then in the 60s, I started getting glimpses of what liberty meant. And I thought, wow, this is different. And so I started reading and studying and thinking how to. And I've told people, and I think it's true, I said, it probably took me 10 years to unlearn all the bad stuff they pumped into my brain for the first 20 years. But the one thing one person that helped me very much in trying to develop the right tone for persuasion, and that was Leonard Reed with the Foundation of Economic Edge. There you go. Because he said tone was very important, and that persuasion is important, and you can't get them by knocking heads together. That won't work. And in a way, we have to be salesmen. If you're in a business and your job is selling stuff, you want to advertise, you want your your product to be good, and you do all the sales pitches. But I don't think we think that through on how to present this. And I don't think we have overcome conservatives who profess and are good sometime on some of the welfare spending. I don't think we do a good job in showing a little bit of empathy. You know, you say, well, you don't have to, and you don't. A libertarian can just march on their way. But I tell you what, the world is better off, and if you want to spread a message, you have to look like you care about people. And the truth... And the neat part of this, the majority of the people do care, but they get confused with all this stuff that's put into their brain, mixed up on the economics, and everybody's doing this because they're being sympathetic and humanitarian and this sort of thing. And if you happen to think that you don't have to join some of this welfare business, then they call you selfish and mean. Like, how did they ever get away with these last 2.5 years or so with COVID that if you didn't follow all the dictates of the dictators and tell us what to do, for some reason we were unpatriotic and we were traitors and terrorists and all these things, and they got away with that. And once again, it's sorting out the truth. And I think our enemy has to be recognized, too, because the first thing is the real enemies don't believe in truth. I actually believe I I actually believe the cultural Marxist accepts the principle that truth is unknowable. You can't have a set of standards and decide this is true or not true. And we've heard this throughout history. People say, you can't know truth. Truth is unknowable. And therefore, somebody still has to fill the void, and that's the people who want power. And then they'll dictate all the rules. So I believe in, and I think most people do, have a concept of a higher law. And I think in a way we appeal to that. And that is the thing that our Secretary of State and CIA agent didn't believe in. Oh, we take training classes on how to lie and cheat and steal, and that's our training. And yet a nihilist, they really believe it. They have no guilt feeling. They're just accept this as being the right thing to do, and that is a hard thing to contend with because they go by thinking they're on the right side. But if you take the individuals that we have in Washington, you'd think they would have shame. They deserve shame, but they don't show it. George Bush was being interviewed the other day by a comic, he was a president for a while. No, sorry, he was in the Cheney administration. somebody came up, and you know how there's some pretty good comics who can go in and have an interview. But this individual he said he was Zelensky, and he was interviewing George Bush, and Bush was going along with it. And this guy let him on. He says, the United States didn't always follow the rules and the things they promised because they had promised that they wouldn't go eastward, they wouldn't pester Russia borders, and they weren't going to push Ukraine to get them into NATO. And Bush's answer was, yeah, you're right on that, but things change. Times change, and it's very necessary. And besides, there's a principle that is not well understood and known that we can take any treaty and leave it on purpose because we don't like it anymore. But that's the principle. Bush was saying that was ingrained, you know, in there. But that explains when we make the argument that the history of Ukraine is very important. You know, when the Berlin Wall came down, we made concessions, and then the revolution we ran, the coup in 2014, and it was all this promising, and so if you say, oh, I disagree with that. I know Russia's no angels, but you know. This is a war between NATO and Russia. That's what's going on. So what should we do with NATO? Maybe you would agree with Robert Taft. He said, don't ever get in it. It's bad news. And I think it would be good news if we just got out again. They're out of it. Now, we don't need in that. And the money's a big thing, but the killing is the real evil. That is it. You know, that is the thing that's so bad. And it's really heartbreaking when you see the ads that plays on the tragedies. You take care of people. I remember during one of our debates, they were talking about whether we'd put more money. We were still in Iraq or Afghanistan. We should have more money because we've invested a lot, and a lot of people lost their lives. And I said, you just keep spending more money to save face? That's criminal. You know, just to pump it in and do the same thing over and over again because they're incapable of making a mistake because they're incapable of understanding what is right and wrong. And they know that. They want dictatorial power. So I think there is a system that can compete with that. And that, to me, is the system that honors, presents, and understands what true liberty is all about. But still, the story is, how do you figure out who's telling the truth? And there was a campaign or a debate event during 12 or 8, one of the debates. And I walked off, and some young people came up to me. There was like three or four together. And they wanted to talk about my statement about the Constitution. They wanted to engage me about, you know, following the Constitution. And they were expressing their liking it. They were very pleased with what I said about the Constitution. And I said to them, I said, do you know that two other candidates, after I said that, they said, you know, that's what we believe, too, you know. And they were saying they were strict constitutionals also, you know. So I asked him, I said, why don't you talk to them? They said, they weren't telling the truth. But I think there's a human instinct that most people know when they recognize people lying. And that's why people can't stand watching television, because all they're listening to are a bunch of lies. But there is some sorting out that has to be done. And of course, I should memorize quotes, but I'm going to read them because I don't want to miss one word. And this is so famous, I should. Everybody will know what the quote is. And that has to do with Shakespeare, when Polonius was talking to Laertes, sending him off to college. And these are the famous lines. This above all, to thine own self be true, and it must follow as the night the day. Thou canst not then be false to any man. I think that's fantastic. And it's old and it's ancient, but it's true. You know, it's a true statement. And people understand that and so clearly. So I believe that we have the advantage. I really do believe that statement by the young people said they could distinguish what I was saying from somebody else because the other one seemed to be fibbing a little bit. I think that is true. I think it was mentioned by one of the speakers about, you know, getting the information out. As a matter of fact, it might have been Daniel that said, yeah, it's the distribution of information that makes all the difference, and there's a lot of power. How were they able to achieve? You know, I try to understand this stuff. I fight it and read about it. I live with those people up there. I knew what it was, but they would keep doing the same thing over and over again, and the people would keep saying, "Well, yeah, I guess so. We'll do that." But you know, I believe. That truth doesn't matter, and that they can lie, and I think they're nihilistic at all, and they say it's not like it's a clumsy thing to do, but it's sort of a philosophic ingrained event, and they paint themselves as very well trained, educated professors who decided that you can't know the truth. And it just happens that history is sort of on our side of that, that their truth is knowable. And the really the danger is that they don't show shame at all. And when I think of some of our former presidents or what's going on right now and the suffering that goes on by their stupidity, you know, why wouldn't they feel badly? I think there's a mixture of understanding what truth is for this post-traumatic stress syndrome, because I think that it isn't fully explained, because there's a lot of bad things that go on in war and a lot of bad things they had to do and a lot of evil things that they had to watch. And then they come back thank you for your service. You've been great. You're a brave person, and that I don't think is very good, especially if somebody's struggling with knowing the truth, because the truth is... But there's so many things like that that's going on today. But I do want to spend at least a couple more minutes on the Federal Reserve. That convinces me the revolution is alive and well. And I know you understand the issue just as well as that 14-year-old teenager that came to see me. So this is great. You know, when I did join the Libertarian Party, and that was in 1987, because that was when I was the nominee. That's something like 30-some years ago. But I was just out of curiosity. Everybody looks so young that I wonder if there's anybody in this audience was aware of or actually got engaged or did anything in 1988. You know, the one thing is I did go to the college campuses. There was a big difference going to the college campuses back then because... You know, it wasn't like, oh, next year I'm going to be the president type thing. But I would go to the college campuses because my goals were slightly different. And I would go, and somebody said, oh, yeah, we have a libertarian club here. You can come. And sometimes we got 15 people out in one meeting. But they were good people, and a lot of them are still working with me now, you know. And you can't stop. And Dave was so good on this. You can't stop ideas. Ideas spread, and they can't be stopped. It's just that we want to make sure the bad ideas get stopped. But they do. Ideas do spread. And the neat thing about it is, I like to think and think about the remnant. The remnant is mentioned in religious views and also in the issue of liberty. There's always somebody there that's going to put together. And I noticed this, several years ago. It was in a token way, this whole thing, because people saw what was coming with the social media. You mean you think they'll can us and kick us off the air? Yeah, they might do that. So I said, I've always had faith and confidence that technology would help. Libertarians were good at technology. I wasn't. But I said, the answer can't be the government coming down hard and trying to sort that out. But the technology is going to be available where we can skirt it. And I think that is beginning. And I think that is good news. But the remnant maintains belief and confidence in a description of what their beliefs are, and I think the number of people out there, just because there's more than 15 people here tonight, and every one of you. I mean, just think of the speakers that you have. How many people they reach? You know, I probably don't even reach half the number of people Dave reached with his famous shows. It's fantastic what happens. But I have teenagers or college kids that now, in spite of all the terrible things and the restraints on our speech, there are a lot of people start their own podcasts, and you never know how many they reach. And I try to do as many as I can, but I know there's a lot, and a lot of them are good. And you can't count them. In the Bible said you can't count the people in the remnant. You should say, well there's not enough of us. But there's a couple things. There's a lot more than we know about. And the other thing, numbers aren't the most important thing. You know, the numbers are important on leadership. And I would put this room filled with leaderships for the ideology of liberty, because that's important. Because the total number, you don't wait until there's 51% and have pure democracy say, oh, 51%, we're going to change the Congress. We're going to start voting to quit the spending and all this. It's not going to work. You have to have the leadership. And I'll tell you what, if you want to learn something, I'll bet we have lessons to learn from the cultural Marxists. They were the most tyrannical infiltrators in everything. And it's really scary, but because they are way off base, everything they're doing and will do will fail. People are but we have to be available, you know, to point these things out, and that's why sorting out the truth is very important. And I think that's really our job, to deliver the truth and get to the point where you know, I'm not saying this to talk about myself, but there was a point where people would reach and say, you get me, because they didn't really endorse what I want, but they wanted me to take a side and be on their side. And sometimes it was a strange coalition. It might be a liberal issue, it might be a draft issue, something like that. But they want to do it because they want somebody, and they want you to be credible and you understand it, and it has to be done in a manner that, you know, like Leonard Reed tried to teach, it isn't a rough sell. It isn't grabbing somebody on his shirts and all. It has to be a lot different. And somebody said, well, how did you put up with all this stuff? You were up there a long time. You never passed anything except the Gold Commission. So... No, they said, you were up there for a long time, and nothing happened. So why is it that nothing happens? And I said, well, how did I manage it all? And I said, well, it wasn't difficult. I said, you know, I introduced a lot of bills. I talked a lot about liberty. I really felt dedicated on two things when I went. I wanted to work for sound money and stop all the stupid wars. Little minor little thing to do there. And I said, and they said, well, you didn't do all that stuff. And I said, yeah, but I still didn't, it still didn't make me disgusted. I wasn't downhearted because of that. And they said, why not? I said, I just had low expectations. I didn't think, matter of fact, the opposite occurred, because believe me, if you can think about me practicing medicine in 1974, it was 71 when Nixon gave his speech that we were going off permanently and totally off the gold standard. I read into this big significance, and that was a big event, and I've been interested in that. I got into a campaign. It was in 1974, the first campaign I got in. But that was a Watergate year. And Texas was about 90% Democrat. And somebody got wind that Ron might run for Congress. And find somebody to run, nobody else would do it. But it just turned out that it was different. But my goal was to talk about these issues. The issues that you're talking about right now, and you're talking about how to spread these issues, but the spreading of the issues will become much easier if you follow the rules of straightforward honesty about it. And another bit of advice that I got is know your subject. Know your subject. I felt like I wanted to talk about monetary policy. So ever since the 60s, I've read endlessly. I'm trying to understand. It's hard to understand a secret organization. They hide everything. It's a big job, but there's room for optimism for it, because I think what's going to happen is we're in the middle of it now. The major crash, the crunch is coming. The Fed can't bail us out now, and people are suffering right now. There's a bit of information that is very, very typical of recessions and problems. Prices are going up, and the people rightfully say, well, I don't have enough money to pay for this. I want the government to do something. And yes, that's true, but they should be more accurately saying, my money isn't worth much anymore. It's lost its value. And the real reason you're having trouble is deficit financing, because nobody's against deficits. I mean, it is unbelievable, you know, how willing they are to spend. You see, even this week, Biden came up with a proposal for next year military budget, and the Congress is wanting to raise it already, and they haven't even debated it. You know, they just raise it up, and they're getting away with it because there's enough people who still believe this. But they're going to lose confidence, and that's when we may see what Mises called the crack-up boom. That means when people want to get out of money, all money, and then they buy anything. But they don't buy paper, they buy stuff. And that's liable to come. But people ask me about investments at the time, and I try to avoid doing too much of that. But I like to think that the investment thing is, it's not so much an investment, but it's protection. I want as many people to be protected. See, we're all going to be better off if we're in a group trying to survive, if a group like this understands exactly what you're doing, it's going to be so much easier. So that's why, to me, education is so very important, that people understand, and they understand economics, but they're not going to get that information from government schools. I don't believe that. You know, also people think, well, the freedom stuff, that's old-fashioned stuff. Well, tyranny is old-fashioned, probably older than freedom. No, they've both been around a long time, and they both, freedom and slavery and tyranny have always competed. But modern-day freedom, the development from the Industrial Revolutions last 200 years, essentially in the American Revolution, even though it's in trouble. Just think of all the things that have happened in the last 200 years. And I keep thinking, you know, my dad was born in 1904, and he would tell me stories that we lived on a little place that was their farm at the time, and they got into the milk business. They did retail milk delivery by horse and buggy. And that's in my lifetime, him telling me these stories are a real thing. But just think of where we are now. Technology is so magnificent. And the real tragedy there is how much of the technology and the ability to take that money out of the pockets of people and make it be spent, and the technology is fine and dandy, even though the government shouldn't be doing it. And what they do is they spend all this technology. How much of the technology is being used for missiles and drones and submarines and nuclear bombs and all this? And so much of it is used for killing, and so little is being used, you know, to promote the cause of liberty. That is our job, our responsibility. It's necessary now as much as ever before. The message is there, it's loud and clear, and it just needs an army of people to spread the message. Just think, if a room like this is dedicated, could each fund 100 people that would say, you know what, you've converted me to becoming a libertarian? I mean, that is a revolution. This is revolutionary. And I want to close with a very complicated statement. Not only is freedom new, but freedom is popular. Thank you very much.
Let me give you a hand.
Yeah.
So great to see you. Just put your arm around me. I'll give you a boost.
And the Fed! 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 And the Fed!
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Ron Paul, our greatest hero. He's my greatest hero. He's our greatest hero. He's the Libertarian Party's greatest hero, Dr. Paul. All right, thank you again so much, everyone, for all of your efforts this year and coming here to this convention. It's not over yet. We need every single one of your votes tomorrow. Set your alarms, plug your phones into your extra batteries, make sure, and we'll see you. Michael Heiss has a couple of parting words for us here. Thank you again, everybody. Good night. Thank you.
All right, I'm not going to take up too much of your time. I just had one thing that I was really feeling on my heart that I wanted to say while we had this opportunity, and I actually wanted to address this to Dr. Paul himself. You know, when the Ron Paul Revolution happened, you know, yeah, I found the philosophy of liberty, and I was lit up on the ideas of liberty and the ideas of freedom and the philosophy of freedom, but that wasn't what I learned in time was that wasn't the main thing, I don't think, that made me fall in love with that revolution. It was the example of Ron Paul's character. It was the example of Ron Paul's courage. And, you know, that is something that I found at a time in my life when I desperately needed it. And, you know, it changed me on a very profound level. And it was one of the best times of my life. And it's something that I've wanted back ever since. And that's really what animates this project that is the Mises Caucus. So, Dr. Paul, I wanted to tell you that what caused me to act was knowing that if something wasn't done, that this party was not going to uphold your legacy. And that was absolutely, positively unacceptable. So I've always chased having those days back, and thanks to all of you guys, it certainly feels like they're back, and we're going to move forward with that. We're going to carry on that legacy. We're going to make Dr. Paul proud, and we're going to carry the revolution on from here on out. So thank you guys. Dr. Paul, I love you. We love you. And thank all of you guys. Take human action.